Welcome to Pod Save America. I'm John Favreau.
I'm Dan Pfeiffer.
On the pod today, to get his immediate reaction to the James Comey hearing, the ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee and friend of the pod, Adam Schiff, will be joining us in just a few minutes. Later in the program, we're also going to have the host of Crooked Media's With Friends Like These, Anna Marie Cox. And yeah, exciting show. We got quite a hearing just now, Dan.
Happy Comey Day.
Happy Comey Day. Also a reminder, some voting reminders. June 20th is coming up, and that is the day that the election in the Georgia 6th will be taking place. So if you're in Georgia, if you have friends in Georgia, remind them to vote for John Ossoff. He's in a tight race with Karen Handel. So, who during their last debate said, quote, "I do not support a livable wage." And that was a great move by Karen Handel there. So go vote for John Ossoff. Also, this hasn't been covered as much because it's not quite as close, unfortunately, but the race to replace Mick Mulvaney in South Carolina, the Democrat there is Archie Purnell, and he's making it a close race there. So if you're in South Carolina and you're in that district, in Mulvaney's old district, or you know someone there, go vote for Archie Purnell. And of course, the Virginia primary.
Tuesday.
Between Northam and Tom Perriello, who's on the pod for governor. Look, we're on this pod. We're for Tom Perriello, but you know, we're just a reminder for everyone to go vote in the primary for sure.
That's right, vote.
Oh, we have Representative Schiff.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Very good.
Okay, we know you got a whole bunch of things to do today, so we'll get right to it for you.
All right.
So on the pod today, we are very lucky to have, for his reaction to the Comey hearing, ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee, Adam Schiff. I'm assuming he just came from one of the bars in D.C. To talk to us right now and give a reaction. Representative Schiff, thanks for joining the pod. Okay, first question. What was the most important thing you learned from the Comey hearing today?
Well, what I found most striking was the President of the United States basically told the Director of the FBI to drop a pending criminal case involving his National Security Advisor.
That unusual?
Stunning. And the FBI director also testifying that he was fired basically in an effort to alter the course of the Russia investigation. It's hard to imagine something much more serious than that.
So the standard for obstruction of justice is corrupt intent, is the legal phrase. I know you're not, you know, prosecuting a legal case here, but what other kind of intent could Trump have had when he asked Comey to drop the investigation of his National Security Advisor?
Well, I had the same impression that Director Comey testified today about when it comes to the president's intent, and that is, to me, what has always been most striking is the fact that the president asked everybody else to leave the room. That certainly suggests to me that he was consciousness that what he was doing was wrong. And so that's probably among the best insights into what the president knew and whether his intent was corrupt or not. If it was above board, then why have this conversation completely in private? Why orchestrate it to have all these conversations in private? I think the president was certainly aware that what he was doing was improper. So that, to me, is the most telling thing. We're also going to want to know, though, what conversations did he have with other intelligence agency heads? Did he ask directors Coates or Rogers or Pompeo to weigh in with Comey also? Because whether they did it or not, and Comey said they didn't weigh in with him, the more important question is, did the president make this ask also of these other directors?
Representative Schiff, I was curious what your reaction was to Mr. Coates, Pompeo, and others being unwilling to answer these questions yesterday.
Well, I thought it was completely unacceptable. There is no legal basis that they articulated for them to refuse to answer the questions. It clearly is not classified. They can't hide behind classification and really didn't make an effort to do that. There was also no claim of executive privilege. Now, there may be a subsequent claim, but there hadn't been one made at that time. And so they should have answered the questions. The fact that it was awkward is not a reason not to. The fact that they want to keep their jobs is not a reason not to. Ultimately, we're going to have to get those answers. I did speak to Director Rogers after his testimony to underscore my view that they're not going to be able to persist in refusing to answer those questions.
What kind of means do you have to get them to answer these questions?
Well, we can compel them to answer. I ultimately don't think that's going to be necessary. We should find out in short order whether the administration is going to make a claim of privilege. I think it's going to be a very weak case. case if they try. In fact, I think the president has waived any privilege. I think the witnesses yesterday waived any privilege by talking in part about this, by saying basically they didn't feel that this president had pressured them to do something they thought was illegal or improper. It's not really the question whether they felt it was improper or illegal. The question is, did the president make that ask, whether they did it or not? So I think it would be a flawed claim of privilege, and then we'd have to litigate it if it came to that. But I don't think we're going to have to compel them. I think these witnesses are ultimately, and I hope sooner rather than later, going to agree to answer those questions.
To go back to Comey for a second, Speaker Ryan, I guess, had a press conference during the hearings where he said that he sort of attributed Trump's actions related to Comey to the fact that he's, quote, new to this. I wanted to get your reaction to that.
I don't buy that at all. I think a lot of people want to write off this president's conduct and say, well, he's not a career politician. This is just his way of doing business. You know, I think everyone understands how inappropriate this is. You don't have to be a career politician. We don't hold you to a different standard depending on what your path is to the highest office in the land. You're held to the standard of the law and the Constitution. So I don't buy that. I don't accept that. I think that's really a dodge, and we ought to demand the same high standard of behavior from this president as we do of any other.
Some Republicans are arguing that today was a win because Comey said that he told Trump he wasn't personally a subject of their counterintelligence investigation. Obviously, in the House, you're running an investigation yourself. Is Trump himself connected to the House investigation?
Well, you know, all I can talk about publicly is, you know, we're looking at any of the connections between the Trump organization and the Russians. We're looking at issues, obviously, of whether there was any coordination or collusion in terms of the hacking and dumping operation. We're also looking at whether the Russians exerted any kind of financial interest, financial entanglement over the Trump family or organization in the same way they have done in Europe, where they entangle people economically as a way of using leverage. We're looking at allegations, obviously, of whether there was any compromise or compromising material on anyone affiliated with the Trump organization or administration. So all of these are issues that we're looking into. And I think if we're going to do a thorough job, we have to look at all the tactics that the Russians use elsewhere and try to determine how many of them were used here and against whom.
You had said previously that you believe there's more than circumstantial evidence of collusion between Trump associates and Russia. Do you believe that's still the case?
Yes, I do. And, you know, I thought it was very illuminating people's reaction to the written testimony, and I'm sure the actual testimony now that we've had it, with some members saying, well, there's no evidence of obstruction. I think there is evidence here of interference and obstruction. Whether there is sufficient evidence is a different question. But if we were prosecuting a case of obstruction, and you move to admit this as evidence that the president demanded loyalty, that when he didn't get that that answered, he later fired the director, that the president directed him to drop a case involving Mike Flynn. When that didn't happen, he was fired, that he wanted the cloud lifted, all of these things, and the president's own explanation for why he acted. All of that is evidence. Now, people may have different views about whether it's sufficient evidence, but it is evidence, and I feel the same way in terms of the collusion issue. There is evidence. Whether it is sufficient or not, we can't say at the beginning of the investigation, but there's certainly a good reason why the FBI opened their investigation. There's a good reason why the FBI and special counsel continue that investigation, and there's good reason for us to continue our investigation in Congress.
As your committee pursues this, do you feel like you're getting good cooperation from the Republicans? Do you think that for the most part, the Republicans actually want to get to the bottom of this, or is there just sort of a lot of the traditional politics being played?
You know, I think you saw, you know, during the open hearing today in the Senate, there's obviously a variety of perspectives among Democrats and Republicans. I do think there is a willingness and a commitment to get to the bottom of this. At the same time, you know, there were members who were much more interested in looking at the Clinton administration and actions during the Clinton administration and whose questions were more focused to that. But I would certainly hope that there's a bipartisan interest and commitment to following the evidence wherever it leads. I know that Mr. Conaway and I have both committed to doing that and to doing everything possible to conduct the investigation in a nonpartisan way, I think. Mr. Senators Burr and Warner are endeavoring to do the same thing, and I think that really has to be the right approach.
What would you be doing differently if you were the chairman of the Intelligence Committee right now? Are there any things that, any actions you would be taking that you cannot right now because you're the ranking member and not the chairman?
Well, you know, I can't say that my perspective is going to be identical with any of my colleagues on the GOP side, so I'm sure I would do things a bit differently. But nonetheless, the witnesses that I want to bring in have been agreed to. The witnesses that my GOP colleagues want to bring in, we've agreed to. You know, we'll have discussions, I'm sure, about what the best strategy is and what the best timing is and how much of our investigation should be done publicly and how much should be done privately. Those will, you know, be the subject of ongoing discussion, and I'm sure I would have a somewhat different approach if I were running the investigation rather than the, you know, minority lead in this investigation. But the most important thing is that it go forward and that the work get done, that there not be any artificial constraint on the information that we can get, that when people refuse to cooperate, that we have agreement to subpoena them. And that, I think, is the common ground that we have to have.
Will Jared Kushner be testifying publicly before your committee?
We'll certainly want Mr. Kushner to come before our committee. It's my expectation that with respect to most of the fact witnesses, what you'd call percipient witnesses, those are involved in the actual events, I would expect that most of those interviews are going to be in private closed session. I would like to have as many hearings as we can in public. Like the hearing today, I thought was enormously valuable. Certainly would have loved to have that in the House, but the most important thing is that it get done in one committee or the other in public. We are in the midst of scheduling our next public hearing with former Secretary Jay Johnson. He was one of the signatories of the attribution, the first public acknowledgement by the administration that the Russians had done this hack and that it was ordered at the highest levels of the Kremlin. He was also the one who was interfacing with our state elections officials and can talk to the threat that is posed to our elections infrastructure. So that'll be our next open hearing. But I do think that Bob Mueller has one responsibility, and that is doing investigation in terms of what criminal charges ought to be brought. We have a different responsibility, and a key part of that is informing the public, and that needs to be done in open session as much as possible.
Congressman, for our listeners who may not have followed the congressional oversight process particularly carefully before this, can you help them? How does this end? Will your committee publish a report that lays out its findings? Where does this end, and how will the public know what happened?
Yes, at the end of the day, and if all goes well, we will conclude our investigation. We will develop two reports, one classified and one unclassified. The unclassified report will tell the country, okay, here's what we found. Here's what we found on these allegations. Here's what we were able to corroborate. Here's what we couldn't corroborate. Here is where we think a criminal referral is necessary to Bob Mueller. Here are the steps that we think we need to take to protect ourselves in the future. Here's what we can learn about how the government responded in the past and deficiencies in the government response. So I would imagine our report will cover all those things. The key question, which we won't know until we get done with the investigation, is will it be, in addition to a classified and unclassified report, will it be one report for both Democrats and Republicans, or will there be a majority report and a minority report? I sincerely hope that we have one report reflecting all the members, and ideally one report that is very much the same in both House and Senate. I think that would be the best service that we can perform to the public.
Representative Schiff, thank you so much. I know you're busy today. We appreciate you coming by.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
This is Pod Save America. Stick around. There's more great show coming your way.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food. And before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Race to savings now at Menards. We carry the largest in-stock selection of Energizer batteries ready for your next project. Power up your devices with Energizer batteries. Nothing outlasts the long-lasting power of Energizer Ultimate Lithium batteries. Right now, get a 4-pack of lithium batteries for $9.99 through February 14th. Plus, view our weekly flyer on Menards.com and race to savings on all your battery needs at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
All right, so that was Adam Schiff's take on the testimony. Dan, what was your main takeaway?
Well, first I want to say, like, we're becoming like a real journalistic enterprise since...
Yeah, look at us.
Yeah, we have the ranking member of the Intel committee calling in moments after the hearing ends so we can provide our listeners with
thrilling
up-to-the-minute takes. I mean...
It's more of a journalistic enterprise than how I watched the hearing, which was just lying in bed tweeting. Emily and I were just dual tweeting in bed with Leo. So that was the kind of operation we had running this morning. But now we had Schiff on the phone, so that was pretty great.
I know, we're legit. I went in with high expectations, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And the drama and what Comey said and the political significance of what Comey said greatly exceeded my very high expectations.
Yeah, it's funny. My expectations were lowered slightly yesterday because I didn't realize that they were going to release his written testimony for the record as they did yesterday. And so, first of all, that was some gripping fucking testimony, really like a novel. Whoever would have thought that James Comey would have inserted testimony into the record that used the phrase Russian hookers, but we'll get there later. But once that happened, I was like, well, maybe this is all the good stuff. And it also was so carefully written that I thought maybe he would be, in typical James Comey fashion, pretty dry today and just sort of lay out facts and not really comment that much. But He opens the hearing with this impromptu statement without notes that was very compelling and basically just called the president of the United States a liar.
Not basically.
Did.
Called him a liar.
Said that the Trump administration tried to defame the FBI and the with lies. And sort of the way he went after Trump from that opening statement, I was like, okay, well, James Comey came to play.
Yes, he did. I mean, the drama was incredible. And it is worth taking a step back to realize where we are, which is because everything is happening.
Which is not in a
so
great place.
And there's the insanity of the Trump presidency, but the fired director of the FBI went before Congress and broadcast live on all the networks. This is like some Watergate shit in terms of the coverage and intensity of it, and said the president was a liar. He believed he was fired because he refused to drop an investigation into the president's associates, and said essentially that while the president of the United States may not have been under part of the counterintelligence investigation that Comey was overseeing as FBI director, in part because he fired Comey, he was now pretty sure President Trump was under investigation for obstructing justice. The president of the United States
Yep.
is under investigation for obstructing justice.
Yeah, big deal. I just want to go back to that point because I think it gets confusing to people because there's like a number of different investigations, and also in a way Republicans are purposely trying to fuzz this up, in James Comey's words. There's two investigations going. What started was a FBI counterintelligence investigation into Russian interference in our election in 2016, right? As part of that investigation, we know that they are currently investigating various Trump associates, right? And yet, we also found out that Trump was right that James Comey assured him on a few different occasions that Trump himself was not personally the target of the counterintelligence investigation into Russian interference yet. But his associates are, right? So you have that investigation. Trump, through his actions and general fucking idiocy, has now created another investigation, most likely, as Comey said today, into whether Trump obstructed justice, into whether Trump interfered with the investigation that Comey was running, and specifically into an investigation into Trump's national security advisor, Michael Flynn, which Comey also confirmed today was a criminal investigation into Michael Flynn for possibly making false statements to federal investigators. And Comey said today that, you know, I mean, Comey basically built a good case for obstruction of justice today without saying the words. He said, of course, as we all expected him to say, you know, I'm not a lawyer. It's not for me to decide whether it was obstruction. But two points he made strongly lead you to believe that it was obstruction. One, which is Comey said he believes, he's like, I take the president at his word that I was fired because of the way I was conducting the Russia investigation. That's number one. And number two, he told him to he believed that when the president said, I hope you can let this go, meaning I hope you can let Flynn go and let that investigation go, he took that as, quote, a directive from the president of the United States. So I think that's probably a pretty big deal.
If Trump had a subconscious, you would think he wanted to go to jail or wanted to get out of the White House, because all of his actions are the actions of someone who wants to get caught. Fact is, though, Trump doesn't have a subconscious. He basically has the complex thought processes of a single-celled organism. Eat, sleep, tweet, whatever. You think if you go back to what to the mistakes here, right? I mean, first one's obviously firing Jim Comey, but Jim Comey is probably the worst person Trump. Like, if you were set yourself in Trump's place, like after the election, and you think based on reports that I have some my presidency has some legal vulnerability because of Russia and Jared Kushner potentially being a Russian mole and all the other things, and you would say to yourself, what should we do? But we really don't want to anger Jim Comey,
right?
And so he did the opposite of that. He tried to inappropriately suck up to him, and then he angered him. And you basically, the Jim Comey is the perfect, if you were to design the worst person to be compared to Trump in the role, that might be Jim Comey.
We also now know that Trump lied. I mean, we always known he's been a liar, but on May 18th, Trump was asked at a press conference, did you at any time urge former FBI Director James Comey in any way, shape, or form to close or to back down the investigation into Michael Flynn? Trump's response, no, no, next question. So either Jim Comey, the FBI director, chose to lie under oath today, even after Trump said, by the way, I might have tapes that recorded our conversation. So if you're Jim Comey, you're thinking, what should I do? Trump said there might be tapes. I'm under oath. Should I lie about what Trump said to me or tell the truth? Seems like from everything we know about Jim Comey, he's probably telling the truth there, right?
Yeah, 100%. Comey, if you read between the lines of Comey's testimony, he very carefully and smartly revealed the names of people who can corroborate in real time what was said to him by Trump.
Right.
He mentioned the names of people at the FBI, at the Department of Justice, that he went to and relayed the conversations when they happened. And so if this proceeds down the investigative path, now the investigators know who to call and who to ask, who will then testify under oath that, yes, Jim Comey told me long before he was fired that Trump said these things to him. And I mean, he played this masterfully. He absolutely played it masterfully, and as he should, because he's been in this exact position before, once before, being at war with an administration who wanted him to do something illegal.
Also, like, I just like to say, if Trump is going to go out there, or the White House is going to go out there and say, no, Jim Comey was lying and Trump was right that he never did ask him to back down the investigation to Michael Flynn, then you know what, Mr. President? Put yourself under oath and tell us then. You know, like, go ahead and go into public testimony, go under oath, and tell us that what you said was still true. Because he won't, and his lawyers won't have him do that, because they know he'd be lying, and then he'd be, you know, then he'd be in trouble for perjury as well as obstruction of justice.
That's actually a great question for the next reporter who interviews him to ask him.
Yeah.
Would you be willing to testify under oath? This is a free idea, Glenn Thrush. This is all yours.
Or to the White House, would the president be willing to testify under oath that he did not ask Jim Comey to back down the investigation of Michael Flynn?
Bet they're not
going to say yes.
I bet Trump might.
Yeah, actually. Who the
I really
knows?
Do. That I think would say if anything. Asked, he might say yes, because it's sort of like test his manhood, and he might do that. I don't think the White House press office would do it, and we wouldn't know because they have approximately 45 seconds of question and answer every day. 30 of those seconds are for LifeSet, Breitbart, and InfoWars. But
yeah.
Which does bring me to see, I guess, Sarah Huckabee Sanders did an off-camera press briefing today, which is fucking convenient. And I can't even imagine the reaction of the White House press corps to the fact that on this day they refused to do it on camera, but I guess no one cares. But she said she can definitively say Trump is not a liar.
Yeah, so that's...
Which is a lie.
This is why you can't keep your integrity when you flack for a liar, right? Because then you have to get into a meta situation where you say that the liar is not a liar, and thus you have lied.
Yeah.
She also said, when someone asked, is there a taping device, is there a secret recording device at the White House? She said, I don't know.
That's actually probably the only truthful thing she said.
Right. That's probably wise for her to say that. You made this point on Twitter, and I think we said it earlier too, but a huge point from this whole hearing today was the fact that it seems pretty clear that Bob Mueller, the special counsel, is investigating Trump for obstruction of justice, because Jim Comey told us. Someone said, you know, will he be looking at this? Will he be looking at whether this is obstruction? And Jim Comey said the word sure. He's sure. He's sure that Mueller is investigating.
There's no way Comey would have said that without knowing. He and Bob Mueller are incredibly close, and he clearly has the utmost respect for Bob Mueller, and he would not have said that if it was not planned.
Right. So I bet Bob Mueller could not say publicly that the president is not a target of investigation right now.
That's right.
So a couple other things besides Trump. I think Jeff Sessions and Rod Rosenstein had sort of a bad day today. Comey told Rosenstein about his concerns with Trump before he was fired, and yet Rosenstein still wrote the memo saying that he was fired because of the way he handled the Clinton email investigation. That seems pretty off.
Really, Rod Rosenstein, who, I mean, I guess he redeemed himself somewhat by picking Bob Mueller, which is really bad news for the rest of the administration, but who had this quote-unquote sterling reputation that the Republicans and Democrats were so excited about when he took the job, really acted like a partisan hack who was afraid for his job instead of standing up for the right thing. And just stupid. Like, you know how these things end. Like, walk away while you still can. And
yeah.
Writing that memo will be, like, the first line in his Wikipedia page for the rest of his life.
He was not...
And if it's not Friends of the Pod, please add it always for the rest of time.
He was not, in Jim Comey's words today, Captain Courageous.
No.
Also, Comey said that the FBI was aware of facts that would have made Attorney General Sessions' continued involvement in the Russia probe problematic. So Sessions has got some stuff that he's hiding there as well.
I mean, it could be the multiple meetings with
Kislyak.
Russian spy recruiters that he failed to put on a security forum or disclosed under oath to the Senate. This is a couple of thoughts.
Possibly. So how do you think, let's talk a little bit about the Republican reaction to all this. How do you think these profiles in Courage have handled themselves so far?
Well, to be a Lovett-esque straight shooter, mm-hmm. I would say that it could have been worse.
I thought Richard Burr actually handled it the best today. Like, he handled the hearing fairly well.
Burr?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think their main goal, with a couple of notable exceptions, was to try to tread water, to neither do anything that would really hurt Trump nor carry water for him. Like, maybe ask one or two questions that they can say when, you know, Don McGahn or Mike Pence calls them, say, look, I asked this, but to not seem as ridiculous as I'm sure members of the Republican House will seem. Like, they kind of would walk up the line, ask a couple questions that might maybe help Trump, but they didn't push it and they didn't get in Comey's face. So
I would say that's true, except for my exception would be two Republican senators. Can you guess who I'm going to say?
Does one of them have the first name Little?
Correct. Marco Rubio and...
Let me guess the other one. Is the other one a pen pal with the Iranian regime?
That is correct. Ding, ding, ding. Tom Cotton.
Dang, I win some parachute sheets or something.
You did. coincidence, those are the two Republican senators that had dinner with Trump a couple nights before the hearing. What a surprise.
That was so dumb of them. Like, everything is so ham-handed. Like, Trump's obvious reason to have dinner with them is so that he can influence them to carry water for him on the committee. They are smart enough to know that's what he's doing, yet they still go, and then they carry water for him on the committee. It's like, they don't even put the cards up their sleeves. They just stick them on their forehead and walk out. I mean, it's just so...
So the big...
It's like, it's offensive on the level of just have some fucking savvy if you want to do bad things.
So I haven't really been paying attention to the right-wing media, the entertainment media reaction, Republican media, as you call it. But I'm guessing the big headlines there are going to be basically Trump is exonerated because Comey told him he wasn't way back when the target of their counterintelligence investigation. Bad day for Loretta Lynch, because at one point during the Clinton email investigation, she asked Comey to call it a matter instead of an investigation, which is sort of silly because everyone was calling it a fucking investigation anyway. So what difference did that make? And also Comey basically acknowledging that he did sort of take over that investigation and give that public press conference because Bill Clinton decided to wander over on the tarmac to Loretta Lynch, which was savvy move by Bill Clinton. So that's going to be a big thing for them. And I'm trying to think what else. I'm sure they'll all call James Comey like a criminal or something like that and say that he's the one in actual legal trouble. I'm sure that's coming.
I'm going to take my guess. All the things you said are undoubtedly true. I'm going to guess the Fox News reaction will be around hypocrisy from the Democrats, and they'll just show clips of people like Dianne Feinstein fairly criticizing Jim Comey for his judgment in the email thing and then praising his integrity, even though those are two ideas that are completely consistent with each other. But it'll be Democratic hypocrisy and liberal media hysteria.
Yep.
ABC, liberal NBC, liberal ABC, CBS carrying this thing live. You know, just the media's in the bag against Trump. It'll all be so dumb. I guess Fox carried it live. I assume that, right?
I think they couldn't get away with that. Even Fox probably couldn't get away with that, with not covering it. Did you love Chris Christie's comment yesterday to Nicole Wallace, friend of the pod, Nicole Wallace, when he said that Trump telling Comey to back down, that I hope you can let this go on Flynn, was a, quote, normal New York City conversation?
Yeah, if you're in the New York City mafia.
All the time, New Yorkers are walking around to each other asking, directing law enforcement officials to drop federal investigations. Just, it always happens.
Yeah, I mean, it's always worth doing. This is tiring and frustrating, but let's just do the alternative universe where Barack Obama fires Jim Comey because he won't drop the email investigation to Hillary Clinton during the election year, and then does an interview with Lester Holt where he says that's exactly why he did it.
I mean, it makes me laugh because it's so crazy to think about that.
Yeah, I was in an email exchange with a Republican who was defending the indefensible actions of their party. And I used this example and said, if that had happened, the Republicans would have drawn up articles of impeachment in 2 minutes, and they would not have been wrong to do so.
Right. I mean,
but that's also why Barack Obama didn't do it, because he's neither evil nor dumb.
Well, I mean, you said dumb, right? Like, and you mentioned this to Schiff, like the Paul Ryan reaction. I mean, talking about Republican reactions, right? So they range from the I'm going to ignore everything that happened and just focus on, like, you know, trolling liberals like we usually do, or Loretta Lynch or whatever else, to what Paul Ryan said, which was, oh, you know, it sounds like another example of Donald Trump being a novice in politics and just not really, you know, just sort of stumbled into obstruction of justice. Just, you got to give him a break on that. I mean, I don't know about that.
Okay. Well, one, if your defense is the president is too dumb to know what the law is, or too dumb to have seen all the president's men, that's not a good defense. Second, if Trump thought this was totally appropriate, he probably would not have kicked out other people from the room so we could have a private conversation with Comey. And three, I'm not an attorney, but I'm pretty sure this is true. Ignorance is not exculpatory.
No.
If you were to get pulled over for DUI and you were to say, oh, I thought the law was 0.8, not 0.08, you still go to jail. It's such a stupid argument.
Yeah. So a lot of people are asking now, like, okay, so what does this all mean? What happens next? Does anything come of this? Was this just like some fucking show that the whole country got together and watched on a Thursday morning, and now we're all going to go back to everything else and no one's going to care and the Republicans aren't going to do anything and that's that? So what can come out of this now in terms of the next steps on whether Trump obstructed justice and whether he's going to be held accountable for that?
This is depressing. It is.
I know.
Trump has immunity by Republican majority. Right. And there's no crime he could commit that would lead to the Republicans impeaching him. Now.
Jonathan Chait yesterday wrote a piece where he said, on a scale of 0 to 10, with 10 being a videotape of Trump speaking in Russian to his handlers from the Kremlin, we're currently at about a 7.5.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's nothing. Paul Ryan is the most embarrassing. Like, Trump's corruption is not the problem in America. It's Paul Ryan's cowardice. And
yeah.
So But that does not – there are congressional outcomes and there are political outcomes. And Trump's approval rating is in the toilet and going down. And if you want to get some – and so we have to win elections. We have to – people care. Like, everyone says nothing matters, but there's a pretty clear connection between the heightening noise around the Russia investigation and Trump's approval rating. And – Republicans may stand with him at 34, but they may stand with him with his approval rating at 34 a year and a half from the election. 6 months from the election, if Trump's approval rating is at 34 or below, they are unlikely to stand with him. That doesn't mean that they will impeach him, but it means they may become more aggressive oversight critics of him as opposed to sad water carriers.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm at this point, too. I don't believe that any action or any revelation of actions or statements that Donald Trump has made in the past would lead Republicans and a Republican majority to begin impeachment proceedings for this president. I don't. They have shown unwilling. They've been unwilling to even get close to that now. I do think that, like, you know, jury selection in the trial of Donald Trump's possible obstruction of justice is November of 2018, basically. That's when you can pick a Democratic Congress that can get to the bottom of this. Short of that, I think the only other avenue here is special counsel Bob Mueller, right? Because Bob Mueller, through his investigation, remember now that his investigation is not just a counterintelligence investigation. It is now, you know, by all accounts, or by James Comey's account today, very probably an investigation into whether the president obstructed justice.
The challenge, that's all true. And that's where the meat of this is it's in Bob Mueller's hands. The challenge is it's not clear that, I mean, Trump could be indicted. I don't know, it's not even clear that Trump could be indicted while he's still in office. You would potentially have to remove him from office to do that.
Right.
We need to hear from friends of the pod like Kathy Rumler and Norm Eisen or others. But
yeah,
there are some real questions about whether this has to end in some sort of political outcome. And I do believe that if a grand jury indicted Trump for obstruction of justice, I believe Paul Ryan would not do anything. I 100% believe that.
Yeah. I mean, I hate saying that. I never thought. I mean, yeah, probably. You're probably right. It's very, very sad. So, you know, we've said this a million times here on Pod Save America, but we can easily get wrapped up in this Russia stuff. And I do believe, like, you have to walk and chew gum at the same time. I believe that this, like, some things that don't necessarily matter to voters and, you know, that people out in Ohio and Wisconsin and stuff like that aren't, you know, caring about every day still may matter. As a general, you know, like, did the president obstruct justice? Like, I don't care if that's, like, politically wise or not as a message, but that's something that we have to find out, regardless of whether people are caring about it every day. But that said, it seems like there's a lot of other issues out there that are getting short shrift because everyone's focused pretty intently on the Russia circus. And one of those is healthcare. And I think over the last week, sort of while we've all been focused on this, some reporters and other people have been focused on the fact that the rewrite of the House Trump Care bill is happening in the Senate right now. And it is more probable that it could get out of the Senate, it could be voted out of the Senate now than it ever has been. And that's extremely alarming.
Yeah, I have some breaking news on this, or at least I think it's breaking. Dean Heller,
yeah, I saw that on the way
top target here, just flipped his position on phasing out of Medicaid expansion and now said he'd be okay with a 7-year phase out, which seems to be the idea that the Republicans are coming around. So it is very, very, very possible that, and maybe even probable, that absent some massive activity on the part of the grassroots and Democrats, that McConnell will get this bill out of the Senate with 50 votes, and then the Affordable Care Act, as we know it, will be gone.
So we should tell people first what the bill looks like that's coming out of the Senate. Okay, so how is it different from the House bill? Well, we don't know exactly, but so far what we're hearing from reporting is, remember, the House bill allowed certain states to apply for waivers to do away with the protections for pre-existing conditions and essential health benefits. It looks like the Senate bill will not allow states to apply for waivers on the protections for pre-existing conditions, but it will still allow them to apply for waivers to get rid of essential health benefits. Remember, essential health benefits say that every insurance plan that is sold has to cover things like hospitalization, ambulance rides, doctor's visits, cancer screenings, right? Like all kinds of maternity care, right? Substance abuse, all kinds of benefits that theoretically then could allow insurers still to discriminate against people with pre-existing conditions by not offering these essential services. So very, very bad. The level of Medicaid cuts are the same as the House. They are just delayed longer than the House cuts are delayed. So it does look like when we have a CBO score, which we will have on the Senate bill, that the 14 million who will lose their insurance because of Medicaid cuts, which was how many would lose it in the House bill, on top of the 10 million who would lose it for other reasons, adds up to 24. You'll still probably have 14 million, at least 14 million, losing their health insurance because of Medicaid, and probably millions and millions more because of, you know, less generous tax credits, subsidies, the waivers, et cetera. So the Senate, whatever you're reading, the Senate is not improving the House bill by much at all. So that's the substance of the bill, the politics of the bill. It appears now that you probably lose Susan Collins because the bill is too conservative, hopefully, right? We don't know that for sure, but she's in all of her statements, she seems like she's not too keen on this bill. You probably lose Rand Paul because it's not conservative enough. He basically wants, you know, no subsidies, no tax credits. Rand Paul thinks, you know, the government shouldn't have any role in providing people health care. So Now that means if you lose those two, McConnell needs all 50 votes in the Republican caucus that are out there otherwise. And then Pence breaks the tie for 51. So who do you have? You have Rob Portman from Ohio, Cory Gardner from Colorado, and Shelley Moore Capito from West Virginia, all states that accepted the Medicaid expansions that have high Medicaid populations. Most of them have said, all those three now have said, that they're probably on board with the slower Medicaid cuts in the Senate bill. And as you just said, Dan, so is Dean Heller. You've got Ted Cruz and Mike Lee, who might be like Rand Paul in saying that the bill isn't conservative enough. But you know what? I don't think Ted Cruz or Mike Lee are going to be the ones who stand in the way of Mitch McConnell passing this thing in the Senate.
Nope.
You've got Dean Heller and Jeff Flake, who just mentioned. Those are the two senators who are up in 2018 who are in the most purple states, Nevada and Arizona. So far, Heller's said very disconcerting things about this bill, that he likes it. And then you've got Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan of Alaska. Alaska took the Medicaid expansion. They have the highest health care costs in the nation. So it is a special deal with Alaska, and you think they might, McConnell, at the end of the day, might buy off Murkowski and Sullivan with some kind of special Alaska deal that gets their votes. So it is, I mean, he does have to, you know, run the table and get every single one of those 50 votes, but it's looking like it's possible right now, which is terrifying.
It's very possible, because at the end of the day, I mean, Lisa Murkowski, to her credit, has shown modicums of political courage over time.
Yes.
Just like Collins. And Flake, also, to his credit. The rest of these folks, I wouldn't bet on very much. But McConnell, unlike Paul Ryan, McConnell is good at his job. His job is to do evil in the world, but he gets things done, and we are going to have to fight like hell here. And this is, and what I do not want to hear from one single fucking person is, think how good the politics will be if senators have to vote for this piece of shit to advance it.
Fuck that.
We do not gamble with the health care of 23 million people. That is a
we're not Republican politicians
to be in office.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
You win elections so you can get people health care, even if it means you may lose them down the line. You do not allow people to lose health care so you can win more elections. That's why people hate politics.
So the timeline for this, they basically need, first they need to come up with the bill, and then after they have the actual text of a bill, they need about 2 weeks for the CBO to score. Again, they are gonna wait for a CBO score, unlike the House. That's the Congressional Budget Office. They'll calculate how many people will lose their insurance, what premiums, what would happen to premiums, how far they'd go up, et cetera, et cetera. McConnell really wants to get this done before the July 4th recess, because he knows if these members go home for recess, again, there'll be town halls and protests and everything, and so he wants to get this done. So he has very little room for error here and for delay. So what can people do? I emailed Ben Wickler last night from MoveOn.org, who's been on the pod before, and he said, so here's what he said to me. He said, first of all, put the Capitol switchboard phone number, just program it into your phone. It's 202-224-3121. And he said, just make as many calls as you possibly can every day. He also said, when you call, don't just register your opinion for the call tally. Instead, ask for the health legislative assistant in the specific senator's office. So, for example, if you're calling Susan Collins, that's Elizabeth Allen. For Murkowski, it's Chelsea Holt. We have a whole list of the legislative assistants on healthcare. We will send them. I will tweet them out after this. Pod Save America will tweet them out. He also said, recruit others to call. Go on Facebook and type in friends who live in Maine, or friends who live in Alaska, or friends who live in Nevada, and ask them to call Susan Collins and Murkowski and Sullivan and Capito and Heller and Flake and Gardner. And he also said, visit congressional offices. Don't wait for some group like Indivisible or Move On to plan a protest. Just go to your local office, camp out there, demand that you be seen, take pictures of yourself, video it. We have to just put as much possible pressure on these senators as we can, and make as much noise as we can, and break through the other noise, whether it's Russia or anything else, to really make ourselves heard on this, because we have a couple weeks here. And, you know, the fate of millions and millions of Americans' health insurance is hanging in the balance right now. And I can't imagine anything more important for the resistance to focus their time and effort on than stopping this monstrosity from passing.
Free idea for Democratic senators who want to become close friends of the pod. Filibuster all the time.
Yeah.
Take every hour that is sucked up between now and July 4th is an hour they don't have to pass this. And I mean, Rand Paul did this a few years ago. Chris Murphy has done something, friend of the pod. To just every trick, like there is nothing more important than making sure that this goes to that the Republicans have to go to recess without passing this. Like
yeah.
There's no agreement on votes. There is no, let's cut it. Let's make Senator Flake happy by letting him go on the floor and tout some tree in Arizona. No, just every trick in the possible book you can do. I mean, this is what it's about. It's people. This is about whether people will live or die. Full stop. And everything we do, everything that can be done should be done. And I have faith in our Democratic Senate colleagues. They have been very strong since the day Trump was inaugurated. And I just hope that we can get this thing. We can do everything we can to save the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah. And crunch time looks like it will be between June 26th and June 28th. That's probably when the CBO score ends up coming out. That's what Ben was telling me. So, you know, it's going to be, there could be like 48 hours between the CBO score and when this passes the Senate. We know from the House bill that when the CBO score came out, that was probably the one thing that really broke through all the clutter and made headlines in papers like all across the country. Unfortunately, it was after the House already passed the bill that the CBO score came out. This time, you'll have a CBO score. It might not be quite as bad as the House, but it'll still be pretty bad. Like we've said before, like whether it's 20 million, 15 million, or 10 million, or fucking five, like any bill that's going to take more health insurance, that's going to remove health insurance or take health insurance away from more Americans is a bad fucking bill. So whatever the CBO score is, I think the moment between when the CBO score is released and when these guys vote on it is going to be absolutely critical.
I mean, we should note for a second that the process by which they are passing this bill makes the House look transparent and democratic. They have 13 dudes in a secret room hammering out a bill that would affect millions of Americans and 1/6 of the economy. And then they are going to, through special rules, try to jam it through without a single hearing. Not one hearing. Think about that.
It's unbelievable. Okay, when we come back, we will talk to Anna Marie Cox about everything that happened today. Don't go anywhere. This is Pod Save America, and there's more on the way.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
On the pod, we have the host of Crooked Media's with Friends Like These, Anna Marie Cox. Anna, what do you think? What do you think of the big hearing?
Oh, wow. Well, you know, I've been talking about this a lot on Twitter, so, and I know your audience is probably like totally plugged in, so this may be a repeat for them, but it is really hard to watch and listen to these hearings and not be struck by the parallels to Trump's behavior as a sexual predator and Comey behaving like someone who's been the victim or target of sexual harassment.
As we were watching the hearing this morning, Emily said the same thing to me. She turned and she's like, it really feels like this was like some kind of a sexual assault incident that we're recounting here in this hearing. I was like, that's what Anna said too.
Well, I mean, I think almost any woman, you may not consider yourself like a survivor of sexual assault or really maybe especially targeted sexual harassment, but unfortunately, and it happens to men too, I want to be clear, but because the way our society is, I doubt if there's a woman in the world out there that hasn't had something like what happened with Comey and Trump happen to them. The whole like invite you to a dinner where it turns out it's just the two of you, you know, ask everyone to leave the room so you can have a word alone. But also just kind of like the ominous hinting, you know, like, yeah. Hey, I hear you like your job a lot. You know?
Or but later, like, I thought we had that thing.
I thought we had that thing. And also Comey's behavior is really intelligible to women too, which is the idea that he let Trump assume that he would be getting his own way because he didn't want to make things awkward.
Right.
You know, like the whole like honest loyalty thing, which and of course that awkward silence is incredibly resonant to any woman, and not saying no outright, kind of being a little worried about saying no outright and instead just hoping to kind of train him, kind of keep him on his side of the desk through hints. That kind of thing is something that, unfortunately, like I said, it happens to men and women, but I think women especially common. And it's a power thing, right?
Like, well, yeah.
Because that's the thing about sexual predation is it's not about sex. It's about power. So I'm not surprised at all that like this is consistent behavior for him.
Well, I was going to say, and I'm not surprised at all because if you didn't know Trump, right, like, but we do, we know all the, aside from just the, all of the instances of Trump from the Billy Bush tape on, right, of, you know, his misdeeds from a sexual standpoint, like, everything about him from his whole career has been all about power relationships and him trying to exert power over someone who's working for him or working with him or someone else, like, or people who are on the debate stage with him. Like, it seems like this is the only mode he has, right? Like, this is the only mode he operates in.
It is, although one of the ways that it comes into sort of, it's about power, but also weirdly, like you see gender dynamics at play or an echo of gender dynamics at play,
right,
is also in the way that people questioned, the senators questioned his testimony.
Right.
Which, you know, like, I mean, Rubio basically was saying the sort of like something along the lines of like, well, why didn't you show him a little leg? Like, why didn't you flirt with him? What harm would it have done? You know? Right. And then was it Dianne Feinstein said, you're big and strong or you're brave and strong. Like, why didn't you do something?
That was sort of weird.
Yeah, that was weird. That was
weird,
totally
question.
Weird. Like, I don't know. DiFi has a little thing for Comey. But one thing we know about Comey is like he's probably like an awesome husband, by the way. Like that was like a thing I got from him. Like we can have our doubts about him in many other ways, but I think he's probably never forgets a birthday or an anniversary.
Well, that was funny when he said, like, I really wish I had just gone out to dinner with my wife like I was supposed to that night.
You know, we were joking. The other thing that happened on Twitter besides the really grim analysis of this as an echo of a sexual predator's behavior is Comey Valentine's, was a hashtag that I was doing, which is like, I would be in close session with you, which is, I can sort of imagine him saying that to his wife. Like, he seems like, you know, that kind of guy. But again, so it's the, and the narratives that are coming out of it on the Republican side are also reminiscent of the way that women get dismissed when they try to talk about being the targets of harassment, which is not just like, so there's Rubio's, like, well, why didn't you go along with it? What harm would it have done? It's not that bad. And then there's also, we fortunately haven't seen he was asking for it or look at what he was wearing, but you are getting, it was his responsibility to do something about it. Right?
Right.
And Ryan saying Trump was new to this and unfamiliar with protocol is a little bit like, oh, boys will be boys. you know?
Yeah.
And it's up to women to kind of like police them and teach them what to do. And trying to think of what's another one here. I actually turned off the television, believe it or not, because I need to write.
I stopped at the McCain questioning to get to the studio, but I heard McCain didn't have a shining moment there.
Ooh, McCain had a senior moment. That's what he had. It was actually, you know, I covered McCain in 08, and as you know, and I still have, I'm going to get angry tweets and emails about this, but I still have like a shred of respect for him, because I do.
Well, yeah, you knew him at a different time, and it's hard to separate that from, you know, what you see
today. Yeah, right. And he was like, whatever. Like, I mean, we won't get into like why I have some affection for him, but I do. And so it was just especially disappointing. It also because he's been not terrible on Trump. I mean, it's a low, low bar on the Republican Party side of this, but right. He's been better than
he's
others.
He's issued his share of I'm troubled statements.
Yes. So many troubling things have happened.
He's very, very troubled.
Everyone's very troubled.
Let's talk about the different reaction between Republicans and Democrats and the different universes. It's like we get ourselves spun up about this. We watch this. We watch the hearing. We go crazy. And then, you know, there's like 40% of Americans who are just getting their information from Fox and Breitbart and InfoWars and all that. And, you know, they're going to have a completely different picture of how this thing went down.
It's not just the 40% of America that's, you know, supporting Trump, I think, that won't understand or sense the gravity of this situation. I think it's a lot of people who just don't watch politics that closely. They don't realize how insane this situation is. The former director of the FBI called on multiple occasions the president a liar in sworn testimony on the Hill. Like, that's crazy. Like, I don't know how to tell people other than it doesn't happen, right? But it wasn't very dramatic. We didn't really have a Matlock moment. It wasn't a House of Cards moment, you know? Like, I guess we have a reality television president, so we're expecting reality television from this testimony. And it's really, it's testimony. Like, by the standards of congressional testimony, it's insane and wild, and you and I know that and get excited about it. But by reality television standards, you know, it's terrible. I mean, like, I would have changed channels a long time ago.
It's just like, I mean, Dan brought this up earlier in the pod, but like, you know, people have played this game before. Like, imagine if Barack Obama had fired Jim Comey and then went on NBC and told Lester Holt, well, I said to myself before I did this, this whole Clinton email investigation, this is fake news. And so I needed to get the pressure off. Right? Like, obviously, I work for Barack Obama. I am a partisan, right? Like,
you're a little partisan. Yeah.
But if I had seen that happen, I know that I would think to myself, that's not great. He did something wrong there. You know, like, I don't know that I'd be able to get myself to the place where I thought like, yeah, no, that's totally understandable. And it was fake news and the Clinton email investigation was crazy. And I totally understand that. And it's fine. Maybe I would. Maybe it's hard to put myself in that space, but I'd like to think that I wouldn't.
I would like to think that you would too. I'd like to think that I would. But this just speaks to the divide, not just in, you know, sort of media consumption, but I think the siloing of ideologies, right? I mean,
right.
This is one of the things my podcast is supposed to address, which is that we just don't even talk to each other about the differences that we have. Like, even when we do know someone who's Republican or Democrat, we don't talk to them about why they think what they think. I mean, if politics comes up, sometimes we agree to disagree, which, you know, I mean, we have to do that to survive sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that we've kind of given up on the notion of trying to understand why someone believes what they do. And also the notion that I could, like, entering into such a conversation with enough humility to be like, okay, I'm not going to assume that I'm right here. I'm going to keep an open mind. We don't have open minds. We don't.
Right.
You know, what we're seeing here is people coming in with, you know, confirmation bias. That's what's happening. Like, it's just, we have different lenses, entirely different lenses. And I was watching Fox for coverage, and like, the guy runs on Fox, you know?
Well, look, and but we know from like certain people we're friends with that we know that we talk to that like, it's not impossible to get out of that confirmation bias, right? Like, you're going to talk to Rick. Rick, I'm sure,
right,
does not think that,
right,
Trump has handled himself in an appropriate fashion. Like, Tim Miller has been on the pod. Nicole Wallace has, there's a bunch of Republicans out there who can say, yeah, I'm conservative and I disagree with you on all kinds of different issues, but this Trump thing is awful. And like this reeks of obstruction of justice. Like, there are Republicans who can say that.
Right. And I wonder if maybe the disconnect here is that there are Republicans like that. They are mostly, people who are pretty deeply immersed in the political, you know, conversation.
That's right. That's right.
And so they're following things pretty closely, and they have a lot of information that they're working from.
Right.
You know, like they feel like they know what they're talking about and can say, I know that my party is saying X, Y, Z, but I've seen the evidence, and so I'm going to say A, B, C. Most Republicans out there are taking their cues from the Republicans in leadership. They're taking their cues from Fox News. They're taking their cues from, you know, Rush Limbaugh. They're even not getting opportunity for confirmation bias almost. They're being given the pre-digested, you know, version of events.
And look, we're political junkies and we follow this very closely. And I think as a citizen, you know, it is your responsibility to be educated and to know the issues and to pay attention to the news. But I don't necessarily think it's your responsibility. Like, you don't have to be political junkies like we all are. Like, people are busy. They lead busy lives. They have to work for a living. They have two jobs. They can't be like looking at Twitter all day. So if they happen to turn on Fox News, which has told them for years that they're fair and balanced and that everyone else is liberally biased, and you watch Fox News for 5 minutes, like, I don't know how much I blame people for then having the views that Fox News has spit out via propaganda, you know? I mean, yeah, I don't.
I agree. And I don't know how to get over that except in conversation in our everyday lives.
Right.
Like, I don't know if there's a lot that the media, quote unquote, can do. Because, you know, like when I talk to my in-laws and they have some misapprehension of the world and I say, I would like to send you an article, you know?
Yeah.
They're like, well, as long as it's not from the New York Times.
I know.
You know, like, they cut off a whole like section of the universe for me to draw from, right?
Yeah.
And I also have to say, I do think that it's one of those things that in the media we maybe what we can do a little bit better is giving some more raw data. Because I know I was watching the news with my husband last night, and the coverage of the Comey letter, like, he felt like he didn't have to actually read it. You know, like, he was just going to judge based on what the competing side said on CNN. And I think that's a pretty natural human reaction, but it's frustrating, right?
Yeah.
I'm like with Ben Wittes, who's like, how can you read this and not worry about the fate of the Republic? And I think people who actually read it, I do think even if you're a Republican and you actually read his testimony, it is disturbing. Like,
I was going to say, I do think that, you know, I was just saying, what's a citizen's responsibility? I do think that one thing we can all do is do our best effort to, like, read more primary documents and sources and, like you said, data and statistics and stuff like that. Because I did this yesterday. Someone's like, oh, the Comey testimony is released. And my first instinct was to, like, go on Twitter and see what everyone was saying about it. And I was like, no. Put Twitter down. Read, it's 7 pages, sit here, read the testimony without looking at anyone else's reaction, and figure out what you think from there. And I pay a lot of attention to the news, and it was still hard for me to do that.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that is also the way that if you're going to have conversations with the people in your life you don't agree with, it is so much better if you can point to a primary source and not an article in the Times, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you can say, like, look at this sentence. Like, because I also did the same thing. I also was really tempted to just not read it. And I also turned off the fucking computer, printed it out. Hey, John, I printed it out.
Wow. Well, you know what? We just got a printer in the Cricket Media office. So it's like the first real electronic thing we have in the office besides our laptop. So now we can print out documents. It's really exciting.
You can print. You know what? I think it was good. I had a highlighter and a pencil and I printed it out. Because I was surprised by, like, how amazingly thorough it was, which you don't get from coverage.
Right.
And then also the whole thing, like, they say you hear this or see quotes on Twitter, but it doesn't have the same impact as when, like, he says, I felt compelled to document my first conversation with the president-elect in a memo, and goes on to talk about he didn't do that with Obama. Like, for some reason, reading that, you're like, oh, shit.
I know. Like, something doesn't add up here.
And also, like, details like, it turned out to be just the two of us seated at a small oval table in the center of the green room.
The guy does not miss a beat.
You know what? I also think he would be a great writer.
The last line just, and that was the last time I spoke with President Trump. period end.
Yes, I know. As a fellow writer, you appreciate this. Yeah. And like in the testimony when he talked about feeding seagulls,
right?
You know, yeah. Like, I was which like, is, oh man, did he practice that? Because I would have to practice that.
So who else are you talking to besides Rick for the pod?
Well, we have Noah Rothman, who's an editor at Commentary.
Oh, yes.
A Never
Follow
Trump
him on Twitter.
Fellow. But he is a, I don't want to call him even a maybe Trumper. He objects to Trump strongly, but he is probably the most optimistic Never Trump person we've had on. Meaning, like, he thinks Trump can change. We taped this before the testimony, so, okay. You know, maybe I should follow up. But we had him on to talk to a listener about a friendship of hers that's been estranged because of the election.
I'd get
an actual conservative on to try and help this woman communicate with her friend who, it's a story that unfortunately we're all, you know, familiar with, that a lot of friendships have been strained under this election. So
yeah,
to help her out. And then I am going to be talking to Rick and hopefully get some intel on how this is going to get processed by conservatives out there in the heartland.
I'm not super hopeful, but I will be listening to see if Rick has any hopeful thoughts on that. Okay, well, we will be listening for that tomorrow. Thanks for calling in, and I think I'm going to go read some ads now.
You can read some ads, and I will talk to you next week.
All right, Anna, take care.
Bye.
Bye. That's all the time we have for today. Thanks again to Representative Schiff for joining us, and to Anna Marie Cox for joining as well, and we'll talk to you all again soon.
Bye, guys.
If you guys like Positive America, please consider subscribing to our Friends of the Pod program. So Friends of the Pod get lots of stuff. You get more Positive America. That includes our new show, which is called Positive America Only Friends.
It's where Dan gets naked.
Where Dan gets full frontal nudity, but mostly it's a bi-weekly subscription exclusive podcast that is basically Positive America, but behind a paywall. So it's a little bit looser and more fun. And it's Lovett and Favreau and me and Pfeiffer and then other crooked hosts. We go deeper on the news and cover more stories. You also get Open Tabs, which is a weekly behind-the-scenes newsletter from the show. Plus, you get ad-free episodes of your favorite crooked podcasts and all kinds of other stuff. Dan will come to your house and clean it once every quarter.
Yeah, clothed.
Dan is very busy, clothed only. But along with just getting great content, becoming a friend of the pod, joining our subscription community, is the number one thing you can do to help us grow, to help independent progressive media. So if you've ever thought about doing it, if you ever wanted more Pod Save America, consider going to crooked.com/friends and becoming a friend of the pod.